Beat it. Beat it. Beat it.
Hey, you're kind of cute.
What the hell is that?
His name's BB.
Is he for real? Where'd you get him?
Well, I made him. BB, this is Tom.
Got him for you.
Actually, I'm on a scholarship at Polytech. Studying the human brain.
Oh. What do you know about people live next door to me?
BB.
Sam?
Yeah.
Great tits.
You're telling me.
Father will kill you if you get within 10 feet. He's a crazy man.
He's my father. Sometimes I want to roll a truck over his face, but he's still my father.
Goddamn kid, I told her to clean up her stuff off the stairs. She never would have tripped.
Her brain is dead, Paul. I'm sorry, there was nothing we could do.
Things, you can't just let her die.
I'm gonna save Sam. What do you mean save Sam? She's dead. No, she isn't, not yet. We're gonna go to the hospital. We're gonna get her out before they pull the plug tonight at 10 o'clock.
You're giving her a robot brain?
Giving her a computer.
The battery-powered self-contained computer.
I'm calling the police!
Damn kid.
Elvira Parker?
Yeah, I heard somebody say she called the police. Said she saw Sam in her bedroom window. From what I hear, Elvira's head's all over the walls in there.
I can't keep this a secret anymore. I can't. It's eating me up alive. She's killing people.
Stop it!
Quiet! Quiet!
Stop it! Stop it!
Hi, this is Lori Lafine, and we're on Hysteria Continues.
And indeed we are. Welcome back to Hysteria Continues. I'm completely confused to what number this episode will be, because this is a mini-sode that we're recording at the same time as recorded a different episode, because we've got basically we've got a big slot to fill, haven't we, Eric?
BB.
The scheduling is kind of messed up right now, so if this episode is released as it should be, it should be episode... What episode was the Tenebrae episode?
That was episode 108.
So this will be... If we release it on time, it will be 111, I believe.
Right, okay. So we are... It's a bit like some kind of weird Star Wars thing. We are speaking
Terminator.
From the past.
It's time travel.
Indeed, yes. So we're not having any recently seen, because we covered that when we did the Tenebrae episode, and we're not having any feedback.
I wonder how sexy I'll be when we get to episode 111, when the date actually arrives in a month and a half. I wonder if I'll still be as sexy. I think I will, but...
Well, only time will tell, Eric.
Yeah.
Are you like a fine wine or a good cheese?
Fine wine, I think you'll find.
Okay. Obviously not...
And I'm mature like a fine cheese, as you can tell. After 111 episodes,
yeah, and especially on the last episode, that mental breakdown of yours,
which will
be
three episodes ago for people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too confusing for me already.
I know. Well, let's leave that behind. So Eric is ripe, as we know, and obviously I wouldn't be eating cheese because I don't eat cheese. So, but enough of this fascinating pitter patter. What's that? Sorry.
Chitter chatter.
That's what we're talking about. We are trying not to put it off any longer. We are going to be doing Deadly Friend, but we're going to get straight into the movie. Obviously, as you can hear, we're all various states of mental decline after some of us been up all night and some of us are hungover. Some of us haven't had chocolate for 2 months. And I don't know, Nathan, what's wrong with you?
Well, at this point, it'd be like 3 months not to do that.
Yeah.
Again.
I think I'm just generally insane.
Or unsane.
I'm very unsane right now.
Okay, so if you listen to...
Just like that film we discussed three episodes ago.
Yeah, it just seems like a few minutes ago. How odd.
It does.
It's like Back to the Future. But funnily enough, we are going to be talking about a futuristic story, which rivals... 2001, A Space Odyssey, and some other classics. But should we get straight into it? And this is the trailer for Wes Craven's Deadly Friend.
Who is it?
If you enjoy being really scared, if you're not afraid of the unknown, if you found a friend in fear, then we have a friend for you.
Hi.
Samantha.
Get me the police.
The director who unleashed Freddy in Nightmare on Elm Street, Wes Craven, now brings you his most frightening creation.
Get out of my house!
Hey, girl.
She's killing people. Mom?
Sam?
Sam.
Deadly friend. She can't live without you.
When you're the new kid in town, it's not always easy to make friends. Paul Conway finds it harder than most. A gifted mind has set him apart from other kids his age. So when he meets the beautiful girl next door, it seems his prayers have been answered. Samantha is the true friend that Paul has always yearned for. But just as their friendship blossoms into love, fate deals a sickening and shocking blow. Grief-stricken and unbearably lonely, Paul's obsessive love will cling even beyond the grave. Wes Craven, director of A Nightmare on Elm Street, brings to the screen his most chilling and macabre horror story. A story where grief drives us to open the doors of the unthinkable and where all our personal Frankensteins might finally come home to roost, along with a stupid robot that says beady a lot. You won't be surprised to hear that I think that this is one of Wes Craven's weaker efforts, Deadly Friend. As I should mention this stage, it was chosen by our listener George Ferns as part of the fundraiser for Gory Graduation. Yes, I think it's one of Wes Craven's weaker efforts. I've never been a huge Wes Craven fan, apart from, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street, the two Hills of Eyes movies, and possibly Deadly Blessing. Outside of that, his stuff is really, really hit or miss, and this is one of the misses, I'm afraid to say. I was surprised, actually, going back to it after 20 years, that it wasn't quite as stinky as I remembered it. But it's far from a masterpiece, and it's shocking as well to see this film coming in the wake of A Nightmare on Elm Street, which was made just 2 years prior to this. And I mean, it has all the hallmarks of too many cooks spoiling the broth, and we'll get into the background later. So it's actually probably surprising that it's coherent and semi-watchable in any way. Tonally, it's all over the place. It starts out as teenagers and their robot in suburbia having hijinks and fun antics, you know, very much like a Spielberg or a Joe Dante movie around that time. And, you know, it was made the same year as Short Circuit, which it seems to kind of be emulating. So the first 20 minutes feel very much like a PG movie with slapstick humor and those annoying, quirky robot noises. Overcranked camera shots give the illusion of speed, you know. And, you know, BB, I have to say, is the world's most annoying robot. And he's not a million miles away from being Jar Jar Binks, in my opinion. Paul, the creator of BB, is also quite smug and slightly annoying, I found. He's eager to go around telling everyone how brilliant he is. Is it any wonder he's ostracized from his peers? As it says on the back of the sleeve, anyway. We don't really get any indication of that in the film. Then there's this abusive father-daughter relationship that's sort of shoehorned into the film 25 minutes into it. And it's implied that Harry Pringle, his abuse is both physical and sexual. And it's suddenly the movie's no longer a PG family comedy anymore. It's now sort of a depressing 18s teen drama. And, you know, and then it flips into this Terminator Frankenstein zombie story, and nothing meshes or gels at all in the film. And, you know, the revenge element never really has that you go girl feel to it. I wasn't invested in the plot at all because it's just so patchwork. There's no flow to the film, and I just wasn't invested. So the final third where the revenge is taking place, there's no impact for me. It falls a bit flat. You know, it's a complete narrative mess, the film. But as I said, not as bad as I remembered. It has occasional moments of worth. The much lauded basketball decapitation scene is terrific. And I do, regardless of what anyone says, love the shock ending. I think it's fitting for, you know, for a film that's just been a mess. You might as well throw in a stupid schlocky ending and, you know, give it something to remember it by. And I thought it was kind of fun. You know, and all the scenes I liked in it actually were the ones that were hoisted or forced upon Wes Craven to insert into the movie. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for producers interfering in a film. Now, having said that, the original cut may have been a masterpiece. I don't know. But judging from the opening 20 minutes, I couldn't see that happening. You know, so, you know, Wes Craven probably isn't to blame for it being such a patchwork quilt of a movie. But, you know, we'll never know. We probably will never know unless we see an original director's cut of the film. I think it's an absolute stinker. I wouldn't say it's unwatchable. But I mean, if I went to this with the expectations of it's going to be another Nightmare on Elm Street, I would have been severely disappointed. Fortunately for me, I saw it after reading all the sniffy reviews, so I knew what to expect. The teen hijinks stuff in the opening half is not for me. When the horror stuff happens, it's occasionally, you know, wakes me up from my slumber. But apart from that, no, it's a turkey, I'm afraid. Nathan, I'm feeling you're going to defend this movie, so defend away.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I saw it when I was a kid. I mean, years ago, I was probably about 7 or 8 years old when I watched it. And at that age, I really felt for the characters, especially Samantha.
And, you high.
no. And... I mean, she's abused by her dad, so I mean,
she's a
sympathetic character.
Just the way the film pans out is just, you just don't feel anything for any of the characters, I find. No? Okay.
I mean, I don't know, I did. I her, though, I mean, it was mainly her. The main guy, I guess, you know, nothing against the actor himself, but his character was just a bit bland. But yes, the robot was kind of annoying, and I was actually laughing during the opening montage of this episode because was it you that did it, Eric?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you kept inserting the BV sound over yes. everything anybody was saying. I thought that was brilliant. You're welcome. I really liked the movie, and was she something I wanted to ask, and this is, you know, spoiler alert, was she turning human again at the end? Because when the cops were there and she started, like, she like yelled out, you know, his name in a more human I guess inflection in her voice, so I wondered if she was, I don't know, becoming human again or something.
I don't know. I don't think I was caring at that stage.
I think she might have just been confused. I think probably the film is such a mess that she was probably quite confused by what she was meant to be doing, I imagine.
Yeah.
But the basketball scene is the best scene in the whole movie. And
oh, yeah.
I love Anne Ramsey. And she is just great at playing the mean old neighbor. Of course, I remember her from Throw Mama from the Train. I thought she was just excellent in this movie. And I don't know, like, it's just such an over-the-top moment that you can't help but laugh when her head explodes from a basketball hitting it. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But it's a great scene. And I guess I do kind of agree with Eric about the ending. A lot of people have said they hated it, at least people I've watched it with, but I like the shock ending. I thought it was just kind of outlandish like the rest of the film to me. But no, I would probably give Deadly Friend maybe a 7 out of 10.
Ooh, that's generous.
Very generous.
Well, that's my toughness.
Joseph, would you give it 1 out of 10?
Yeah, I went to the movies and saw this with my older brother, and I loved it back then. I guess it kind of speaks to children in a way because it's got the mentality of a child. I'd say that. I think I'm in agreement with Eric. It's pretty trashy. It's a big stinky turkey. I'd say an undercooked turkey. There's not really a whole lot to like here. You know, the basketball scene is really good. I felt the child abuse angle is just kind of shoehorned in just to have an excuse to turn her into a robot. The problem, you know, I mean, one of several problems is that you don't care for anybody. The BB robot is extremely annoying. Like Eric said, it's just a patchwork of all these ideas, and it's there's nothing really cohesive about it at all. Christy Swanson is just, I think she's bland as well. I mean, I guess she kind of has to be considering the role she's playing, but there's no, you know, like Justin said, there's no rah-rah, or Eric said there's no rah-rah to it. It's just kind of, you know, paint by numbers, just go out and kill people. You don't really feel sorry for her, even though she is being abused by her father. I just felt like that was just, you know, like I said, it was just shoehorned in just so that she'd have an excuse to kill. Yeah, like I said, when I was a lot younger, this is one I saw at the theater, and then I used to watch it a lot on cable, and I hadn't seen it for a long time. I'd say about 15, 20 years maybe. So, you know, watching it this week, I was like, you know, I recall liking that movie a lot, so I'm really interested to watch it again. But man, it really is bad. It probably is Wes Craven's. I wouldn't say it's his worst movie. I still think something like Cursed or My Soul to Take is the nadir of the Wes Craven filmography, but I'd say this might be in his top three.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, I do think he has worse films out there than this. Justin?
Well, I think,
unfortunately, are you a Nathan or are you a Joseph?
I'm more of a Joseph and an Eric on this. Nathan's going to have to be alone with his love of this movie, because it is a train
usual.
Wreck. But I remember, I'm trying to think, I think I saw this at the cinema when it came out, because I've mentioned quite a few times in the past that my first ever horror movie going experience at the cinema was Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street, and obviously I'll be eternally thankful for him for that, and obviously I love a lot of his films. But I remember going to see Return of the Living Dead Part 2 and being mortified by how awful that was. Whether or not I'd like it a bit more now, but and I think the similar experience with Deadly Friends after seeing A Nightmare on Elm Street was that I couldn't quite believe that this was the same man who gave us A Nightmare on Elm Street. Obviously, at the time, I had no idea about the meddling, and the fact is that he hadn't set out to make a horror movie; he'd set out to make a PG kind of kids movie, basically, and all of this was forced upon him. It's a mess of a movie, and I think a lot of that does come down to the meddling. To be honest, if we probably wouldn't have watched, I would probably never have seen the film if it had been like a PG, a kids movie about a cute robot that and somebody brings his girlfriend back from the dead. But in this day and age, you've got like these kind of young adult kind of movies, haven't you, like Hunger Games and things like that, which are made for an audience of kind of teenagers, and whereas the slasher movies are made for teenagers as well, but a teenage audience, but like maybe an older one perhaps. It's just confused, the whole thing's confusing. I quite like the three teen characters. I think they do have some charisma and they do have some likability to them. I was watching with Stuart, he's watching out the corner of his eye, and he just said, "Oh my god, what an awful movie. Are you actually going to be covering this?" And I didn't hate it that much. I mean, there's stuff to have fun with it. I think watching it with looking back over 30 years or almost 30 years ago, it has a kind of charmingly 80s feel about it, obviously being made right bang slap in the middle of the 80s. The very kind of 80s view of the future. I don't know if had Short Circuit come out by this point.
It came out the same year. I'm not sure if it had been released by the time they were working on this film or not.
Right, okay. It was just very cartoonish, wasn't it? Because this idea that, there was nothing... there's hints that there's something wrong with the robot, isn't it? And that's why it gets passed on to Christy Swanson. But it's, you know, it just doesn't work. I mean, it's kind of like, even, you know, when she comes back from the dead, I mean, the only reason you really know she's a zombie is she's got, or kind of, is kind of lots of, you know, she's got more blue eye makeup on than Toya, doesn't she? So it's kind of like, you know, panda eyes. I mean, there's all the other stuff in the film that, whether or not Wes Craven was trying to reference himself or he was forced to, but, you know, the scenes like the furnace in the basement, you know, is obviously a nod to Nightmare on Elm Street. Even has this, the music. I mean, basically, I think what happened is that the you know, this is his first movie for a kind of a big studio, and I've been just tangentially, I've just been watching a documentary about indie music in the on BBC4, and it was saying about how some of the indie artists, when the majors realised that they could make money out of that kind of music, like the Smiths and things like that, they signed up some of the indie bands, and the indie bands didn't realise quite what it'd be like working for a major. And I wonder if that was the same with Wes Craven, because they hired the director of Nightmare on Elm Street, which had made lots of money for New Line. They wanted basically another Nightmare on Elm Street, didn't they? And they were given a kind of kids movie about a cute robot. And so there must have been a lot of battles. And it certainly wasn't the first time that Craven had a meddling, you know, Deadly Blessing was recut, new ending was forced upon him. And so, and a bit like you, Eric, I mean, I like a lot of what Wes Craven does. And in fact, I even quite liked My Soul to Take. I didn't hate it as much as most people. But I could never get, I mean, Craven's obviously a fantastic guy, and, you know, but I always got the impression that he was trapped in the horror genre. I think he would have liked to have done non-horror movies a lot of the time, and I think he just was unable to escape the tag, basically, of horror movie director. Obviously he did that. Is it Music of the Heart? Is that the non-horror movie, isn't it, which I've not seen? But it was a curious choice for him to want to go on to direct a non-horror movie for something went wrong. It should have been flagged up earlier down the line, or he shouldn't have directed this movie. You know, it's got enough Craven-isms, you know, like The Abusive Father, I think, is very much kind of his ilk. It's kind of from his psyche. But it's a misfire on so many different levels, which is a shame, really. But I agree, I think, with what you said, Eric. I mean, Craven's had a reputation for making a classic followed by a dud. You know, and although we can enjoy a film like The Hills Have Eyes Part 2 now, it's a pretty bad movie, isn't it? It's quite difficult to, you know, if you watch something like A Nightmare on Elm Street and thinking, it's sometimes, there seems to be a slightly schizophrenic nature to Craven, that sometimes he's totally on his game and other times he's completely off his game, but sometimes with very entertaining results. So in some ways it's a shame that we're covering this film now, because of obviously Wes Craven passed away recently, and it's not meant as a disrespect to him at all. It's just being honest about this movie. Anyway, so that's my tuppence, as it were. So
I was actually... I watched the theatrical trailer for the first time when I was compiling it for the opening of the show, and I was surprised that there was absolutely no reference to BB the robot in the trailer, which shows, you know, because he's in the first half, he's the main character really for the first half hour of the film, and then he's completely obliterated from the trailer, which is a sign that's something that the studio had no faith in the project whatsoever. I'm surprised actually that it came out as a Wes Craven movie, because this is all the hallmarks of something that would be credited to Alan Smithy, which was the pseudonym at the time that people used.
Yeah. I mean, Craven had a lot of trouble, didn't he, with people. It wasn't probably until he hit his stride with Scream that he was able to.
But even after Scream, he had the exact same problems with Cursed. And I think, didn't he have production problems with My Soul to Take as well, or am I mistaken? But definitely on Cursed, he was the producers stuck their oar in, as if he was a sort of a first-time director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's curious. I mean, I know there's been some biographies written about Wes Craven, and it'd be interesting to read someone to get some better idea of what he, you know, what he went through with stuff. But he seems to have, you know, he seems to have a a peculiarly kind of uneven career and troubles that, you know, you don't hear about other directors like John Carpenter or somebody necessarily having. So,
well, in fairness to him, he was far more prolific than people like John Carpenter, which gives, you know, the odds then are stacked again in his favor of producing more duds than hits, you know, with that kind of work rate. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to diss Wes Craven. I like a lot of his movies. I love three or four of them, but there are a lot of turkeys in there. Swamp Thing, this one, Deadly Friend, Shocker, I hated. Wasn't a big fan of Scream 3 or 4. You know.
I feel Swamp bad.
Well, now,
I love the Swamp Thing. I think it's great.
Well, in fairness, I have not seen that for a long time as well. But Deadly Friend didn't hold up. I mean, I found it slightly more watchable than I remembered, but I still would not. I'm not going to go back to this movie ever again. I mean, I would be intrigued if the director's cut came out to see what the original vision was.
Yes.
So I can't, as I said, I can't imagine it being a masterpiece, but I would be intrigued to see what it was intended to be.
Speaking on that note, I might actually watch Deadly Friend again, only because I found a Monster Vision copy on the Baby Jesus site, which is with Joe Bob Briggs. I'm interested to see what kind of anecdotes he has on the film. So that would be the only excuse for me to rewatch this film. I'll never watch this again.
Yeah, I've never listened to a Joe Bob Briggs commentary. Does he do behind-the-scenes stuff?
Well, this is a TV show back in the
early
90s. Basically, every weekend he'd have an episode dedicated to one movie. And, he would introduce it. And then, you know, sometimes during the commercial breaks, he'd kind of recaps things and he'd say, so here we have four breasts, 10 mutilations, 3 decapitations. And he'd kind of be jokey about it in a kind of a Southern Texas kind of draw kind of way. It was a very entertaining show. So I am kind of curious to see what he said about Deadly Friend, what that episode is like. But, you know, other than that, I have no desire to ever watch this again.
But since Eric brought up commentaries from Joe Bob, I have to say that, yes, to answer your question, Eric, he does a lot of research on the movies he does commentaries for. So he usually has a lot of background on even the most obscure films.
Yeah, he's just the like one. He's the one who actually helped me track down the Savage Water when I found out it was just a title and I couldn't find it. And he just gave me a lot of information on it, and that's basically how I ended up tracking it down to find a PAL copy of it. So he's very knowledgeable about these lost and kind of forgotten B movies and things like that.
And is he still active in the industry?
Yeah, he's mostly on Twitter, and he's got his own website, and I think he might have a small podcast, but it's more like an annual thing, like once a year maybe. But he still does conventions, and I really wish Monster Vision would come back. I mean, it was a terrific show.
He gives speeches a lot too. He came to Chattanooga and gave his film speech about the South in film.
Didn't you go to that?
Really good. Yes, it was really, really good. That's
Did you get to meet him?
Elijah Wood sat behind me.
Oh, you didn't get to meet Joe Bob, though?
No, I wish I could have, but after the speech, when we were lining us out, you know, he went out the side door.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
It's a big tangent, but, you know, it is related to Deadly Friend in a way, I guess.
Cool. Sorry.
I was going to say, has anyone else got any background or anything else to say before we get on to background even?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Apart from Nathan being the sole voice of support.
I've never had a deadly friend, though.
Have you not?
No.
Eric, I just want you to know, I do have a joke of the week to go with yours, so whatever it is.
Well, it can't be any funnier than mine.
We'll find out.
Okay, well, let's see. One thing I was going to say, do you know, as a bonus question, do you know what the link is between this film and Happy Birthday to Me?
I thought you were going to say Cheerleader Camp.
Well, the one thing that it's probably not this because this is too tenuous, but when, spoiler alert, at the end, the robot is breaking through the skin of Christy Swanson's character, it looks like the pantyhose that are ripped off her face at the end of Happy Birthday to Me.
I'm going to say Goblin did the score for both.
No, it's actually, the link is Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, yes.
Because the lead, Matthew Laborto?
I call him Laboratory.
Laboratory, yes. was in Little House on the Prairie. And is it Melissa Sue Anderson was in the lead in Happy Birthday to Me? She was in it. So anyway, that's part of the fun of growing up in the 1970s was being made to watch Little House on the Prairie.
Well, I grew up in the 1980s and I was made to watch it too.
Okay. So
I liked it for Nellie, at least. She was my favorite character.
Is she the one with ringlets? The blonde one?
She's the mean little girl, the mean blonde. Little girl. Yeah. It's really mean.
Mm-hmm. So Nathan likes Nellies. I wouldn't have known that.
So, okay, well, let's some background before we get on to other jokes of the week.
Yes.
So,
Nathan, background, please.
Wes Craven directed a lot of movies.
Really?
Wow. Okay.
That's really good. Thanks for that. Joseph, do you have any background?
No, I do not have any background.
Okay. Justin.
Okay. Well, the film is based on a book that was by a woman called Diana Henstall that was written the year before or that year. So I don't know how, obviously, it's not follow the book that closely, obviously, with all the stuff that was done to the film. But the film also had some other titles before they settled on Deadly Friend. It was there's three different ones. One was called Piggy, which apparently is the nickname of the main character, although I don't think he was ever called Piggy in the film, was he?
No, but he is in the book, though, yeah.
In the book, yeah. Another title was Friend, rather than just Deadly Friend. And the last one was AI, obviously standing for Artificial Intelligence. What else have we got here? Yes, it says, where are we? It says Friend is a 1985 science fiction horror novel, so it obviously was... obviously it's partly horror by Diana Henstall about a young man who tries to help a dying friend survive by implanting a microchip into her, only to find it turns her into a monster. So from that synopsis, it sounds as if the Christy Swanson character was not killed by an abusive father, but maybe was dying of a disease, perhaps. Deadly Friend, when it opened in October 1986, and it took a lot of money when it first opened. I think probably the fact that this was Craven's, presumably his first film after Nightmare on Elm Street, but it dropped off very, very quickly when people actually saw it, which is possibly not the biggest surpriser in the world. And in fact, it had dropped off 50% in its second week and then quickly dropped out of the charts altogether. But that's all I've got on it at the moment, but Eric, you probably got some more about the
it wasn't his I suppose it was his first major theatrical release after Nightmare on Elm Street, but Hills of Ice 2, which was filmed before Nightmare on Elm Street, came out in between, and he did a couple of TV movies as well, one called Chiller and one called Invitation to Hell. But I think this was the high profile one that was being lauded as from the director of A Nightmare on Elm Street. So as you said, it was based on that 1985 novel, which I was reading the synopsis of, and for a teen movie or a teen novel, whatever category was aimed at, it seemed quite dark because, for starters, the two characters in it are much younger than they are in the film. Sam is only supposed to be 12 and Paul is 13. The character of Elvira is not decapitated with a basketball even, as you can imagine. She's actually drowned in her bathtub. The character of Tom is killed in the book. He's stabbed by Samantha. And then the book ends, spoiler alert, with Sam and Paul committing a joint suicide, jumping off a bridge. So it was kind of a dark source novel, and particularly if it was aimed at sort of a younger reader. Test screenings of Craven's initial cut were not favourable, and the studio insisted on adding six scenes of horror to the existing picture. And of course, you can tell what they are. Anytime a gore scene or a ludicrous Christy Swanson scene comes on, you know, that's one of the additions. This meant that the film was subsequently re-edited quite drastically, with lots of character moments being removed from the film to keep it within a tight 90-minute running time. So that's why it has kind of a stop-start, almost confusing feel to it. After Deadly Friend, Craven was supposed to move on to direct. He was attached to direct Beetlejuice and also Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Jeffrey Katzenberg at Disney had no faith in Craven's ability at making a comedy, so that's why he lost out on Beetlejuice. And Christopher Reeve, who I always thought was one of the world's nice guys, put his foot down and said that he refused to be directed by Craven, and that's why he didn't get the Superman 4 gig. But it was probably for the best. You know, I'm not going to diss Superman 4. It's trashy fun. I quite like it. And around this time, also, this was apparently the year from hell for Wes Craven, because it was around this time he found out that his wife Mimi was having an affair. And we've mentioned this before. The affair was apparently with Sharon Stone, who the two had met on the set of Deadly Blessing. Now, this is not libelous on our behalf, because Joe Esteras, is that how you pronounce his surname, the screenwriter? He names Sharon Stone as being the woman who broke up their marriage in one of his biographies. He was also being sued at the same time by an Indian guy who claimed that he'd ripped off Nightmare on Elm Street from him. Apparently, it was a ludicrous claim. He was looking for $30 million, and the two films that he claims were identical were not. So, 1986 was a rough year for poor old Wes. As you said, it opened on October the 10th. It debuted at number 4. It fell behind to Crocodile Dundee, Peggy Sue Got Married, and the best comedy ever in the history of the universe, Jumpin' Jack Flash, was number 3 that week. Hey, was that Snigger? I think Jumpin' and Meep I've will back me it. Up on this. Jumpin' Jack Flash it. Is brilliant.
Okay.
Is it? I've never seen it.
Oh, it's brilliant. You have to see it. It's brilliant.
I'm putting it on the list.
Okay. Christy Swanson, she's gone on to have a half-decent career. I mean, she was the original Buffy in the movie version in 1991 alongside Luke Perry. And she's been in lots of, you know, Naff, well, I would consider Naff comedies like Big Daddy and Dude, Where's My Car? But she also starred last year in a film called Belle for Christmas, which was written by friend of the show Jake Helgren. And Richard Marcus, who plays Samantha's father, he was in, in the last episode we recorded, which was 3 episodes ago, we were talking about Tremors. He was in Tremors. Charles Fleischer provides the really, really annoying voice of BB, much like he provided the much annoying voice for Roger Rabbit.
That's why I hate BB so much, because I hate Roger Rabbit.
So do I. I love the movie, but I just hate Roger Rabbit. There's one very good thing in that movie, but it's not Roger Rabbit. You know what I'm talking about, baby.
Jessica Rabbit?
Yeah. Yeah, of course it's Jessica Rabbit. Charles Fleischer also had a role as a dream doctor in Nightmare on Elm Street as well. And Bruce Joel Rubin, he wrote the script. He also wrote Brainstorm, and he also went on to write the incredible Weepy Ghost and Jacob's Ladder as well. And I think, is that it? That's it for background, I think, yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, thank you. Thank you, Eric. It's going to be a very short one, isn't it? And I'm sure Eric's used.
Well, we've got our two joke of the week still to come as well.
That is true. Shall we start?
Okay. Yes. Who wants to go first?
Do you have a jingle, Joseph?
I'll just pilfer Eric's. Eric, you go first, because there's a slight chance that we may actually tell the same joke, because I just thought of mine like off the cuff.
Okay.
Well, here goes.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
Did you know that in the original cut of Deadly Friend, Sam was going to be burned alive whilst singing a little show tune? It was going to be her crispy swan song.
The sound effect made that joke.
Hey, the joke made that joke, I think you'll find.
That was my sound effect, actually. Thank you, Nathan. I agree.
No, no, you're not getting credit for that joke. Is that Tweaky from Buck Rogers?
It is. Which I thought was I was going to say was inspired, maybe. I found Buck Rogers. I loved Buck Rogers when I was a kid, and I loved that robot. But when I went to see it as an 18-year-old, it probably didn't really do it for me. But but no, thank you. Thank you, Eric. And Joseph, let's see if you can improve. Let me have not improve, just slightly,
it's
slightly different.
My joke of the week. I'm so, so fantastic.
Christy Swanson, in order to get in the mood to play a quote unquote zombie robot hybrid, listened to a lot of music in her trailer. Do you know what her favorite artist was?
Duran Duran.
B.B. King.
Yes. Thank you, Nathan.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, Nathan.
You whore.
Nathan.
Yes. Well, see, I thought of another one yesterday, but you guys already heard that one. So it's basically
I thought of one.
In the original draft, how did they end up stopping Sam at the end? She was shot with a BB gun.
Oh.
I had a really good joke, too.
I can hear a dog whimpering. That joke was so bad.
it couldn't have been that bad.
What was your joke then, Nathan? Do you want me to play you a jingle?
Oh, no, it's okay.
It's too late
now. I don't want to steal Eric's jingle.
Well, you just have stolen my jingle.
Well, I have to say, did you guys know that in her younger years, Elvira Parker was heavily involved in basketball? And do you know what position she played? None. She was the head coach. This is why I don't do joke of the week.
This is why you should leave the jokes to the experts like me.
Well, Eric, us bombing our jokes so bad only makes yours look better.
That is true. I'm not even going to try.
Actually, Eric, yours was fairly decent, I have to admit.
Okay. I liked your one for Deadly Friend.
Thank you.
Justin, this
is where you're supposed to say it was brilliant. Well, Justin, the words are quite easy.
Just to come up with a joke, quick.
Wait, that's good. So,
hey,
talking of
you
annoying
just played
sound
the Price
effects.
Is Right music, hosted by Bob Barker, double B.
Oh.
Yeah, hey. So there you go.
So that's the Spooky. Connection between Price is Right and Deadly Friend.
Yes.
We knew there had to be someone, something somewhere. So that's a very short episode, but that is Deadly Friends. And we are going to be back, as we talked about the time travel, we think... We are going to be back with a Nathan choice from the listener picks. Nathan, have you made your choice for this one?
I have made my choice, and you guys are just going to love this one.
Oh, great.
Oh,
what is it?
I'm going to visit Mr. Slauson at his tourist trap.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I was ready to go. But no, that should be a good one to do.
There's something on the list I can't wait to pick, but I'm going to... wait until maybe the first of the next year.
Okay.
Oh, it can only be one thing then.
What? New Year's Evil.
New Year's Evil!
You gonna boil your hair?
I'm so gonna boil my hair.
Right, well, thank you for listening. So this will come out at some point. Obviously, maybe when this does come out, there won't be Tourist Trap. Who knows what's going to go on in the next few weeks or months. But... I hope you and have enjoyed listening to us discussing Deadly Friends, and can remind us again who chose
George
it?
Ferns. Thank you, George, for that.
Thank you, George. I hope you hope we did it justice, even if we didn't like it as much as you do. But is that Joseph? You sound like Michael Myers again.
Sounds totally like Michael Myers.
What? My button was on mute. How could I sound like Michael Myers?
Well,
it was
heavy
like
breathing.
Heavy breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, was it?
Who was it then?
I think it was.
I don't know.
Oh, it's like
it wasn't.
Oh, it's like unfriended. Yeah, somebody has joined our Skype call.
Let me have a look. Okay.
We all tell secrets about each other. Justin smells.
I do not, Eric.
I have to do it, or else the spooky person who joined the Skype call will kill us all.
What we have to say? Have to say the truth.
Justin wears women's knickers.
Well, I can say what Eric's,
that the truth?
Eric's friends all laughed at him, like Carrie. Didn't they, Eric?
No.
Eric,
when we met.
You're always so mean to me.
You're teasing me.
Anyway. What?
Teasing.
Wow, this is a train wreck.
This is like the movie.
Skype this is a train wreck worthy of Deadly Friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, let me. Let's. So, thank you for listening to Hysteria Continues. So, say goodbye to the good people.
Bye, good people.
Goodbye.
Baby says bye.
What are we going to play out with, Eric?
It's just the end credits music, I think, is it? Or is it the opening credits music? I don't know. I can't remember because of the time travel aspects. Some of the music from either the opening or closing of Deadly Friend.
Eric, did you know that Alan Dale time traveled?
Did he?
Yes, he actually did.
Did he?
Because he was in Star Trek.
No, he was you don't see it, but in an episode of Lost, it's inferred that he time traveled. So there's our Alan Dale connection for the week.
Well, there you go. So you learn something new every time you listen to Hysteria Continues. So, and we will be back with feedback and all the usual stuff next time. So thanks for listening.
God, I'm so tired.
I feel like I could take a nap. Were you not able to sleep because of the clown bed that was built for you?
Yeah. Hello, Joe. Bye-bye, BB. Bye-bye.
Okay. Okay, well, let's see how things go then. So
there's the heavy breathing again.
Yeah,
it's probably me because I'm laying down and I don't realize it.